Whether you have recently received the coveted acceptance letter or just last week hit submit for yet another application, or are just starting to think about applications with an eye towards a 2015 matriculation, you all have something in common: the need to finance your graduate education. For many of you, that will mean loans. And I am pleased to say that I have here with me today two experts and innovators in the student loan field, the co-founders of Common Bond. In this show, we're going to learn about their exciting student loan options. Have you ever heard of student loans and exciting put together in the same sentence? In any case, their student loan options are exciting because they can save you money. Welcome to Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast about graduate admissions. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. Normally at this point in the show, I like to introduce a couple of resources that are specific to the field we are about to discuss. But financing your graduate education is a much more general topic than we typically deal with, so I'm simply going to refer you to our library of special reports. Many of you probably are familiar with Accepted's blog and follow it regularly. We certainly strive there to provide you with great quality posts, but our special reports simply go into more depth than any individual post can. We'll include a link in the show notes at info.accepted.com/39, but don't go there yet. We need first to pick the brains, or I need to pick the brains, of David Klein and Mike Tiramina, co-founders of Common Bond. First, a little background about Mike and Dave. Mike earned his bachelor's degree at Georgetown's McDonough School and then worked for 6 years at J.P. Morgan, ending his tenure there as the VP of the Global Investment Opportunities Group. Mike then joined Wharton's class of 2012. David graduated Brandeis University and then went to work for McKinsey for almost 3 years, followed by a stint at American Express, where he was a senior manager and director. He, too, joined Wharton's MBA class of 2012. They launched Common Bond while at Wharton in 2012, expanded it to 20 MBA programs in 2013. And rather than hearing any more from me, which will definitely be third hand, I want to welcome David Klein, CEO and co-founder of Common Bond, and Mike Tiramina, co-founder and CFO of Common Bond. I'm really thrilled both of you have agreed to join me on Admissions Straight Talk. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you, Linda. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. Now, I got to ask you both, what happened at Wharton that triggered the founding of Common Bond?
Yeah, it was less what happened at Wharton and more, us both being fortunate enough to get in and then having to deal with the reality of paying for it. As we all know, the cost of education is quite high, especially for graduate school students. And so as Mike and I were embarking on getting our MBA, we both actually had to pay our way 100% with student loans. And so having to go through that process, what we discovered was two things. One, the traditional lenders in the federal government and private banks were charging rates that were much higher than we would have expected, and we thought much higher than they needed to. And the second thing we noticed is that the complexity of the space was pretty high, and there weren't too many people to help you out. And so Mike and I, having both gone back to school on what we like to call the other side of average age, both quite committed to starting a company at school and leveraging our financial backgrounds to do so, we thought, you know, given this personal pain we've gone through with student loans, let's do something about it. So that's exactly what we went ahead and did.
That's quite a story. And so you just, I mean, was this part of like a business plan competition? Was it a project that emerged out of a course? Was it something you hatched in, you know, over coffee in a coffee shop? Maybe Mike, you want to?
It was pretty much all the above, Linda. It was everything from having the experience and realizing it needed to change, to then going into one of my first classes, actually, at Wharton, was an intro to entrepreneurship with Professor Ethan Mollick. Mm-hmm. And in that class, we had the opportunity to put the very first official business plan together for Common Bond. At that point, it was around that time when I met Mike, and we decided to join forces and commit ourselves to building out Common Bond.
Fantastic. What makes Common Bond different from other student loan originators?
Sure. Well, we like to say,
for our value proposition to our borrowers is three S's. There's savings, there's simplicity, and there's social good. That's what a borrower gets when they come to Common Bond. We do both refinancing of student loans for folks who have graduated and also help out folks who are in school right now. So if you are an in-school student, you can save at least $5,000 over the life of the loan if you come to Common Bond for your loan. There's a simplicity in our program in that anyone who applies and meets our underwriting standards will get the exact same rate as everybody else. There's no risk of having your credit report run and then being bait and switched into a higher rate versus what might be advertised on the website. We saw that a lot from the traditional banks who were in the space and
really
wanted to be very different. We thought that simplicity was a big value add for the borrower. And then finally, social good. One of the things that makes us extremely different from any lender in the space is that we have our social promise. We've had it from day one. It's a reflection of who we are as co-founders and our backgrounds, both coming from experiences in the nonprofit space. And our social promise is for every degree that's fully funded through our platform, we actually fund the education of the students abroad for a full year. And we have a partnership with Pencils of Promise that helps us make good on that social good, on social promise.
You know, it seems to me like what you're calling simplicity, it sounds, having visited your website, it looks to me like you provide that, but it's not just simplicity, it's also transparency.
It's... We usually use the two interchangeably around simplicity and transparency, and you're right, Linda, the S works a lot better, so we probably stick with that more than transparency. But, you know, if you think about our experience, one of the things that was so frustrating and frankly makes the entire experience overwhelming more than it needs to be is the fact that you don't get information up front. I remember the first time that I asked somebody in the know for help, or somebody who should have been in the know for help, about which lender I should go to, how should I think about it, what are the rates across the board.
You had this fantastic financial background.
Right, exactly. And so here you have the two of us, and we're saying, okay, what are our options? And what we realized is that there was no centralized source for information. And even if we went to any one of these lenders, it's not like the information was fresh off of the website. I remember having to call 10 different lenders and spend several hours on, a Sunday calling 10 different lenders to figure out, okay, I had to make my own grid. What were the rates across the board? What were the ranges? How is it determined what rate within that range I will get? What are the various terms of the loan? What kinds of considerations should I have in mind in determining which one I should go after? Do I have to have my credit run before I get my rate? The answer to that was always a yes. And so it's around this complexity and kind of overwhelming feel without any help that led us with that much more vigor pursue a solution that was much better than a traditional alternative in the student lending space.
That sounds so 1990s, that process. The only difference is that they wouldn't have been open on Sunday.
Right. That's right. And there were a few I had to call back because they weren't open on Sunday.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the social good aspect of Common Bond, but isn't there also a social aspect to Common Bond? In terms of,
we refer to that as the Common Bond community, and it's something that we've noticed a lot of our borrowers and community members find great value in. So it's one thing to be able to save, about $5,000 on your student loans if you're in school, or about $15,000 on your loans if you're refinancing through Common Bond, but there, it's another thing to plug yourself into a pretty strong community, a pretty powerful network of students and graduates and alumni and accomplished professionals across a number of different schools across the country, and plug into this network in meaningful ways, whether it's to find a new job, whether it's to seek career advice or some sort of mentorship, whether it's to go to one of the several community events that we hold across the country throughout the year on topics of extreme interest to our target market. Whatever it is, we are looking and have begun to create the conditions for which meaningful interaction between people is possible and leads to very positive things for professional success.
Now, so you are providing, again, social good is one of your key differentiators and value propositions, but you also provide assistance. Now, the investors invest in common bond, and basically the money is pooled, and obviously it's given to individual borrowers. So it's not like an individual investor is sponsoring a specific student. It's a fund. It's pooled. But the investors do also provide mentoring or employment opportunities or that kind of thing, or how does that part work?
Yeah, it's kind of a two-part question. The first part is, how do investors participate financially? And to that, it's a matter of investing capital onto our platform. Right now, we are open to accredited individual investors as well as to institutional investors. Mm-hmm. And we allow both to participate on our platform.
Mm-hmm.
And through our platform, they're able to earn a competitive financial return, while at the same time, they do have an opportunity to plug into this community that I was talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the benefits included in that have to do with providing mentorship, right? I find it so fascinating that mentorship is a two-sided coin. Both sides generally take away great value. It's also an opportunity to the extent an investor or a group of investors were interested in, in a growing war for talent as the economy improves and as a number of employers are looking for the best talent out there. This is just another community that folks can be a part of to connect with really talented people.
Right.
And that's the case whether you're an investor on the platform, a community, an accomplished professional, a student, a graduate, whatever it is, the Common Bond community can be a lot to a lot of different people.
Now, in preparing for today's show, I noticed that you recently had raised $100 million, not exactly a puny sum, and I'm wondering what are your plans for expansion? I know that up until now you've been doing MBAs only, but it seemed like on the website you were planning to expand to law, to grad, to other graduate programs. Can you go into your expansion plans?
Sure. We wanted to be operationally or prudent, I should say, with how we expand our operations. So we started with one MBA program, our alma mater in Wharton. We then expanded to now 25 MBA programs as of 2013. And the plan for 2014 has always been to not only add more MBA programs or more schools, but also to expand to different types of degree programs. So you kind of alluded to it, where we will be expanding to law, medical, and engineering in 2014.
And are you, now you mentioned, the frustration you had when you applied in terms of, well, you couldn't know what rate you were going to get until, they did a credit report and there was apparently quite a bit of back and forth. Are you offering the same interest rate to all borrowers regardless of, is it like either you have good credit and you can get a loan or your credit isn't good in one case you don't qualify for a loan? And are you going to have different rates for different programs or different schools, or how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, so right now you hit it right on the head. We have one rate for everybody. If you are eligible, if you apply, and if you pass our underwriting scorecard, then you get the rate. We like to say that when you come to Common Bond, you know exactly what you're going to get. And we think there's great value in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that certainly up to this point has been important to us. Now, could things change going forward where we're pricing different loans to different degrees or different products?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. One of the things that we could be doing in 2014 is expanding the choices as it relates to the term of a loan. So right now we have a 10-year term loan.
Right.
That has one. As 2014 continues, you can imagine a world in which we have a 15-year loan or a 5-year loan or both, for
mm-hmm.
that matter. And there, there could be a different rate associated with each of those terms.
I was also wondering, I don't know if this is part of it, but obviously right now the job market for doctors, MBAs, engineers is much stronger than the job market for lawyers. So I was wondering, and law specifically is a longer school, more expensive school than business school or a master's in engineering, not than medical school. And I was wondering if that would affect the price, let's say, of loans for law school applicants. I don't know if you've gone down that route yet, but it was just something that occurred to me.
Yeah, what we've discovered so far is that there's been a lot of negative press around law degrees and its association with unemployment, or maybe it's not a degree that's worth so much anymore. But what's interesting is that a lot of the data shows that law degrees are still a pretty good bet. If you look
at the top programs,
so recently, if you look at their income and if you look at their employment rates, employment is still pretty high. Earnings potential is still pretty high, in some cases, even better than MBA programs.
At top programs, at top law schools, it's 100% correct. I think as you go down the food chain there, it starts to change. But, that's fine. I mean, I certainly don't, I'm sure with your experience, you have the ability to analyze it and come up with the right pricing. How does a student, you mentioned that simplicity is really one of your value propositions from the applicant's point of view. Can you just walk us through the loan application process? We've kind of danced around that a little bit here. I wonder if you could just go step by step through the process.
Sure. So an interested individual?
Let's say an applicant. Right? So this is somebody who hasn't yet started school.
Hasn't yet started school.
Right. They're about to. Maybe they've just gotten accepted.
Right. So, we have a lot of information on our website of, what the savings would be versus traditional options. When I say traditional, I mean the government, which is over 90% of originations each year.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of lay out how we're different, what our rate will be, what you could expect to pay each month based on what you take out. To finance your education. Another tool that we have that I would say about we released last spring is a spreadsheet that helps you think through financing in general. It really helps you prepare for answering the question, is an MBA, can I actually afford it? This tool lays out how much it will cost based on your specific school, and then you can input what you have at your disposal to finance the education. You'll see what the gap is, i.e. how much you'll have to take out in loans.
Right.
You'll then also say how much you think you'll be making once you get out of the MBA program, and that will help help you consider whether the ratio of your debt to how much you'll be paid, so your debt to income,
right,
is within a range that you feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So it really helps you think through before you even get involved with taking out the loans if it's something that you should do.
And so that's where, to your question, Linda, that's where an applicant would start, right? They'd be gathering information, they'd figure out their budget, and then it's time to, let's assume they decide they want to apply for a loan. So
mm-hmm.
they decide they want to apply for the loan, they notice that they can get significant savings from Common Bond. They come to our website at commonbond.co.
Right.
They're able to click their class year, and from there do even further research on the product. They're able to submit a relatively simple, straightforward form online and then go directly into the application, which should take no more than 15 minutes to complete.
Mm-hmm.
The applicant will be will find out immediately once they click submit whether they are conditionally pre-approved or not. To the extent they're conditionally pre-approved, what typically happens is that they may need to submit a form or two or verification document.
Mm-hmm. That would be like tax returns or pay stubs, that kind of stuff?
You know, for the refinance applicant, that's exactly what would be included.
Mm-hmm.
For the in-school applicant, it would actually be less than
mm-hmm.
than that. It might be address verification,
okay.
for example. And then once that's all set, it goes directly to the school that the applicant's going to for the school to certify. And
mm-hmm.
what the school will do is it will determine, it'll look at how much the applicant is borrowing. It'll look first at the cost of attendance for the school, right? So
mm-hmm.
for a lot of these schools, on average, the cost of attendance, that includes both tuition and room and board and other, you know, modest living expenses for a given year, let's call it about $90,000.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said earlier, it's not a very cheap proposition, but it's about
right.
$90,000. That's what the school will use to determine how much you as an applicant can borrow. And you can borrow up to the amount of that cost of attendance, minus any what we'll call free money in scholarships or grants that you may have received along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And if what you're applying for falls within that limit, and you do in fact go to that school, then the school will certify the loan. And once we get certification from the school, we then set a process in place, or rather disperse the loan directly to the school, who takes their piece for tuition and gives the rest directly to the student.
Got it. And I assume you run a credit check somewhere in there.
That's exactly right. And so what's happening right after an applicant hits submit on our application, what's happening instantaneously is all that information is being run against our underwriting scorecard as well as against the credit bureau.
Uh-huh.
Immediately output whether an applicant is conditionally pre-approved from running through the scorecard and the credit bureau.
So the pre-approval actually follows the credit check.
Yeah, exactly. It happens so fast on our system.
It's amazing.
It's almost like an amazing thing.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. And what about we kind of touched on this. So are there other differences, let's say, if you have current students or reapplicants in the process? We mentioned the requirement for a pay stub. Are there other requirements that would differ if one is a current student or a recent grad and wants to refinance their loans?
Yeah, there are really two big differences.
Okay.
For a refinance candidate, this is somebody who's already graduated, and they're looking to refinance and consolidate their debt into one simple loan.
Mm-hmm.
For those folks, what we ask for is for proof of employment, and then we ask for proof of income. Usually, last two pay stubs will suffice.
Mm-hmm.
And those two pieces, those are two pieces of information that we ask specifically to the refinance candidate. Specifically to the in-school candidate, we do not ask those two pieces of information, just because we understand that if you're going to school,
you're not employed.
Not going to have a full-time job, and which likely follows you're probably not going to have much income, if any, either. So that's what accounts for the differences between the two applicants.
Okay. Now, I noticed again that obviously we've discussed that you're planning to expand to law, engineering and med. Do you have is that going to be for the upcoming academic year that you think that'll be in place, or do you know when it'll be in place? And where else do you see Common Bond expanding?
Sure. So on the first piece, we do expect expansion to happen, ahead of the academic year.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of where else we see expansion, one of the things that we've done from the very beginning. Twofold. One, we've set very aggressive goals for ourselves, and then two, we've focused maniacally on hitting those goals. Our first goal back in 2012 was launching one program at one school with about $2 million. We ended up doing that by the end of 2012 with a little over $2.5 million. Our next aggressive goal was to raise as much as $100 million onto our platform within a year, and then maniacally focus on our market of MBAs, and that's what we've done for the last 4 to 5 months. As we head into 2014, the aggressive goal in front of us right now is the expansion across those three degree programs that we've been talking about, and just make sure we provide the best possible student lending experience for students and graduates of those degrees.
Okay. Do you have any, I mean, I think this is only for U.S. permanent residents, right?
Right now it's for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. That's right.
Okay. And do you have any plans to expand abroad or widen that even for people going to U.S. schools?
We'd love to be able to provide financing or refinancing to anybody and everybody who's gone schools in our network. The one question that comes up a good amount is, well, what about international students?
Yeah.
And, we'd love to be able to solve that problem. And it is a problem.
Yes. It's a big problem.
Schools don't even have options for international students. So if you're international, you have to pay your way or you can't go to that school.
Right. Or you have to have a U.S. citizen cosigner.
Right, which, to a U.S. citizen, you might think, oh, that's not a bad idea, but to many of these international students, it's very difficult.
Right.
And so this for us has been, a problem in the market. It has been for a while. We definitely get the feedback from international students and grads that this is an area, a gap we have to close. And so we're working on ways that we can close that gap. Now, the interesting thing is, the reason why the gap is there in the first place and why traditional lenders, emerging lenders, are staying away from the space, or at least have up to this point, is because the initial data indicates that the default rates on international students and grad financing is exceedingly high.
Uh-huh.
In some cases, 5 to 10 times higher than domestic students and grads.
Wow.
And so the question becomes, how do you appropriately price a loan like that if the risk is really that high? Or how do you reduce the risk to get the price lower? And so to the extent we're able to crack that, we will have a solution. I think to the extent anyone's able to crack that, the market will see a solution.
Right. Well, that's a tough nut. That's a very, very tough nut for any lender to deal with under any circumstances. High default rate, no security. I mean, it's just a real, real tough one.
Exactly.
Do you ever lend, let's say, to part-time MBA programs, either EMBA or part-time MBA?
We do. Yep.
That's an option.
Executive MBAs, as long as you're part-time or more.
Mm-hmm.
Full-time or executive full-time, part-time, we do provide financing and refinancing to those folks as well.
Do you have any financial advice for applicants either who are just accepted or applying to matriculate in 2014, or again, as I said at the beginning of the show, perhaps those just starting to think about applications, planning to apply fall 2014 to matriculate in 2015, in terms of preparing them to finance the education? And sometimes it's front and center with applicants, like, how am I going to pay for this? And other times it's, gee, I got in, now how am I going to pay for it? What advice would you give applicants, general advice in this
sure.
case?
It's funny you use those words, because that tool that Mike was talking about before, that allowed...
I definitely want to throw a link into the show notes for that tool, so I'll get that from you afterward.
Sure, and the funny thing is, it came in a blog post on Poets and Quants, and the title was, I'm In, Now What? How to Finance Your MBA. And so you get funny, because in setting up that question, you pretty much used the same language. And that's exactly where I was going to go in response. I think the first thing any prospective student should do is kind of just sit down and understand their own finances.
Yeah.
Understand inflows and outflows. So what capital, what money do they have and could they use to apply toward school? And then what is the gap that needs to be made up?
Mm-hmm.
Usually that gap is large, and usually that gap is financed, which leads to the next set of questions, which is, okay, how much exactly do I want to finance, and who should I get my financing from? And, of course, you're speaking to two relatively biased people when asking that question. What we would tell you with a straight face, believe is accurate, is that Common Bond provides the best student loan experience in the country, period.
Uh-huh.
We think that the savings that a prospective student will see by going through us is valuable and meaningful. And we think the community and network that they plug into when joining the Common Bond community is both valuable and significant. And finally, and Mike alluded to this, you know, one of the things that makes us different and that we're super proud of is that for every new borrower that comes on to our U.S. graduate-based lending platform, they're quite literally powering social good.
Mm-hmm.
As Mike said, for every fully funded degree on our platform, we fund the education of a student in need abroad for a full year. And so between, you know, more money in a student's pocket to plugging into a powerful network that could help propel your professional career while at the same time powering social good, we think Common Bond presents one heck of a financing option for folks.
That's great. Mike, do you have anything to add to that?
I mean, I'd say, you know, specific financial advice.
I was actually thinking more in terms of, like, general advice, not so much for the – well, I did raise both the people who kind of got in and now go, now what do I do, as well as for the people planning ahead.
Sure. I mean, when I think about the spreadsheet that we put together to help you think through that, a lot of folks do think, okay, I have this much in savings. I can borrow a little bit from my parents at a really, really good rate, and I'm going to have to fund the difference. Then they look and they find out how much the school costs. I do think people do at least that calculus, and our spreadsheet kind of helps lay out all the considerations. But it's really with that kind of the last part of the analysis, actually calculating what your monthly payment is going to be for what you're going to take out. Having spoken to tons of MBAs over the last few years, I was surprised with how few knew what that monthly payment would be. And obviously, bringing it down as much as possible with a lower rate is incredibly helpful. And then thinking, okay, if I'm going to be making, I think I can make X coming out of school, does that put me in a really bad position when I have to pay then, you know, rent and transit to work, et cetera? So I think that's what folks really have to think about before they get involved with this, if that's something that they're comfortable, a burden that they're comfortable taking on. And if they do, to Dave's point, I think that they are will help themselves out by going with Common Bond.
Right. One of our children at one point was in college, and he announced one day that he thought he wanted to go to law school. And this is, when you know, law school seemed to be like the ticket to everything. And we were very surprised because he'd never expressed any interest in law school. He'd never done anything that related to law school. And frankly, we were rather skeptical that maybe he just liked being in school. And we did not think that was a good reason for going to law school. So we said, well, how do you want to pay for this? And he said, well, I'll take out loans. And we said, really? I said, how do you, how do you want to pay the loan back? He said, well, I get a job. I said, how much do you think the loan is going to cost? I don't know, a few hundred dollars a month. And I said, so I remember we sat down with a calculator and we calculated out for him what, you know, it would cost to pay off $150,000 in 10 years. And his eyes got big as he realized it was like another rent. He decided against going to law school because he really wasn't that interested and was pretty much what we suspected. And he's doing just fine now. Financially and professionally, but that whole thing of people just kind of thinking about it and saying, well, no, it's not just going to be a couple hundred dollars a month. to pay off $150,000 in 10 years. You know, it's something you have to do, and you really have to calculate it out. And to the extent possible, you have to save ahead of time.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly the analysis that Mike is talking about. You know, one of the things that I think is really important and that we do with anyone who comes to our site as well as our borrowers, and that I'd really love to see much more of, particularly in the student loan market, is this whole idea of financial literacy.
Right.
The whole idea that, you know, students should know exactly what going to school really means and going to which school really means,
yeah.
Particularly as it relates to their finances. You know, one of the things that I'm encouraged by is the fact that, you know, the Education Secretary, Arne Duncan, is looking to create a rating system for colleges and universities around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what this rating system will do is essentially compare colleges and universities against themselves across dimensions that really matter for the students who graduate from these institutions. Things like job placement, things
mm-hmm.
like typical income, things like, you know, all different kinds of performance metrics
right.
that will help students determine, okay, when I'm done paying for this education, which is really expensive, what can I expect on the other side by way of employment prospects and earnings potential? And
Right. Given
that fuller view at the end, that light at the end of the tunnel, as well as the understanding at the beginning before you embark down it around what a monthly payment could be if you take on X or Y dollars of debt, I think that really helps clarify the picture for a lot of students and their families in determining, you know, what school to go to. When at that school, what to study relative to somebody's financial position.
Right. This is a great idea. Now, I have one last question, and it's of a more personal nature, and it's for both of you, or each of you individually. And that is, you both had absolutely incredible work experience before you went back for your MBA. You had intense, valuable, responsible jobs with blue-chip companies. Why did you go for an MBA, and did you find it worthwhile? Dave, you want to start with that one?
Sure. So the immediate answer is absolutely worthwhile.
Okay.
The nuanced answer is it depends on who you are.
Of course.
You know, as I've said before, I'll speak about my particular case. In my particular case, you know, I've been in corporate America for about 10 years. I'd mentioned before I was on the quote-unquote other side of average age. I
relate to that. Well, on the other side of average age. Yeah, go ahead.
I could have gone either way. But what was really important to me is, you know, having come from a family of entrepreneurs and having had the experience in the corporate world that I had, it was time for me to start a company as well. And in that thought process, I was determining what would maximize the chances of entrepreneurial success. And, you know, one of the things I thought about was if I could get into an MBA program, could I use that as an opportunity to incubate an idea and accelerate it from that environment? And to make a long story short, I was fortunate enough to get into school, ended up going to Wharton, and did just that, used the Wharton experience as an opportunity to incubate an idea that turned out to be Common Bond and accelerate it by meeting people like Mike along the way, as well as professors and advisors and fellow students and classmates who helped us craft this business and create a bit of a launching pad for ourselves from Wharton, such that when we left, we were focusing on Common Bond full time. The last thing I would mention, because everything I've mentioned so far has been professional in nature,
mm-hmm.
the last thing I'd mention as it relates to getting an MBA, and one of the things that I think is the more underserved point when thinking about an MBA experience is the personal transformation that I see so many people go through in a two-year MBA program. Certainly, it happened with me in my time at Wharton, and it happened with so many of my friends who graduated as well. But the idea of finding out that much more and or better who you are, what makes you tick, what makes you a better leader, what makes you a better person, and what you can do to become a better person, those things are invaluable. And I think the MBA experience is unique in the time and space it provides the students who attend to figure that out for themselves.
That's a fantastic answer. Thank you, Dave. Mike?
Sure. I don't know how I can follow that up, but I'm going to try.
Sure.
For me, the motivation came from actually running a diabetes charity, which I was doing on a volunteer basis, in addition to working at J.P. Morgan. And I had a blast, an absolute blast. It was a great learning experience working at J.P. Morgan. But I just got so much more out of working in a small team environment with lots of different functions, whether it be a marketing or fundraising, to help this charity push forward. And I said, well, the next stage of my career, I wanted to similarly be something entrepreneurial, something small team-based. So it was just great to, one, get out of the bubble of the financial services industry. Coming to an MBA program, I was able to get exposure to folks from all sorts of backgrounds, and that really helped, you know, my development both personally and professionally. I wanted to meet other accomplished people hungry to achieve and build something great, and I met Dave, which was a fantastic event in my life. Similar to Dave, I really wanted to build a company coming out of school and build it while we were in school. We were lucky to be part of the Wharton Venture Initiation Program. It's an incubator where we receive bi-weekly advice from experienced entrepreneurs. And that was really key for helping us get the company not just off the ground, but to where it is today. And I'll say as a final point, the classes were also great too. In particular for me, the entrepreneurial marketing classes, which kind of helps how I think about marketing Common Bond today.
That's a wonderful answer, because, of course, there's a lot of people, I don't know if they just like to bash or whatever, but sometimes it seems like there's a certain amount of bashing for the sake of bashing. And I've asked this question many times. Different occasions, different schools, different top schools, when you talk to people and say, did you find you had this really rich experience prior to your MBA. Did you find it worthwhile? Did you learn? And every single time they'll say, yes, it's been fantastically worthwhile. So, okay. I just one last question. You've been really generous with your time, and with this we really will close. Do you have any advice, other than going to Common Bond for financing, do you have any advice for applicants applying to any top MBA program? You've obviously both done it successfully.
Advice to who, Linda?
MBA applicants.
As it relates to where...
Not as it relates to getting in.
Aha, getting in.
Getting in.
Yeah.
Getting to that point where you can say, I'm in, now how do I pay for it?
Right. It's a great question, Linda.
Okay.
Funny thing is, no one's ever asked us that. You know what I would
I didn't even have it on my list of questions that I sent you ahead of time.
this is great. I mean, the more kind of genuine, the better. My immediate response is it's a very personal one. I don't mean personal to me. I just mean personal in general. I think the best way to get in to a program is in figuring out who you are to the best of your ability before applying.
Uh-huh.
And I think that can happen in a couple different ways. It could be do the thing that you love or that you're passionate about. And if you don't know what that is, and a lot of people don't, especially the ones applying to business school, that's probably why they're applying to business school, then go through the motions of what people who are older and wiser than you have already gone through to figure out what motivates them, what makes them tick, what they are passionate about, what they should be doing with their lives. And whether that's, you know, quitting your job in finance and working at a startup, or whether that's stopping working at a startup and wanting to get into finance, whatever direction. Whether it's reading books, reading classics, whether it's, you know, running that marathon for the first time because you always thought you wanted to run a marathon, you couldn't do it, but now you're committing to do it. Whether it's, you know, starting to do yoga, whatever it is that people generally do to help unearth and uncover more parts of who they are and what makes them tick, I think that's the best advice I could probably give to anybody applying to business school, because knowing who you are is going to help significantly with where you apply.
Mm-hmm.
It's also going to help with how you put your application together and what you say in your essays, what's going to make you interesting, and
mm-hmm.
what kind of a picture, the more clear the better, you're going to give the admissions committee to understand who you are and make them want you to be part of the mosaic that every admissions office puts together for every class.
Sounds good. Mike, do you have anything to add?
It's related. When I think in my specific case, right, like I wanted to do entrepreneurship and I was coming from finance, and I could have just said I'm going to apply to these schools and only schools. I'm not really sure why, other than they're really well-known, great reputation. You have to go several steps further, I think, in that research process. So, you know, finding out, okay, if you want to go to Wharton, and you know, where do they stack up in entrepreneurship once you're there? What are the types of classes that you'll take? What are the opportunities to start a company while you're in school? So you learn about the Wharton Initiation Program. You learn about some of the programs they have to allow you to forego an internship and get funding over the summer to kind of get your idea kicked off. That all relates to Dave's point. Once you're able to put that picture together, you can really show the admissions office why, how, what you're going to do once you get into the program to make their program even better, even stronger, and also to Dave's point, to help yourself out, both personally and professionally.
Great. Thank you both so much. I know you gave the URL before, but I'd really appreciate it if you would give it again. How can people learn more about Common Bond and your work?
Sure. Just go to commonbond.co, commonbond1word.co.
Great. And I'll get that other link. We'll include a link in the show notes both to Common Bond and to the tool that David and Mike spoke about earlier. Listener, thank you, too, for joining us for our 39th episode. As always, please share your feedback. 5-star reviews on iTunes are particularly welcome. You can leave any kind of feedback on iTunes, Accepted's blog, or by emailing linda@accepted.com. And if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. David and Mike, one last final thank you for a wonderful, wonderful interview. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.